It's the ERP Confab. I'm David Essex, editor-at-large at Search ERP, speaking today with my colleague Brian McKenna of Computer Weekly. Hi, Brian.
Hi, David.
Today, our topic is ERP in a time of pandemic. We'll talk about how the global health crisis of COVID-19 is affecting ERP vendors and buyers. Brian will drill down into SAP and discuss its recent financial report, CEO changes, and other news. Next, we'll look at the rest of the ERP market and how the immediate impact of the coronavirus could change the cloud ERP equation for good, and where there might be opportunities for ERP owners amid the crisis. Finally, we'll take a look at how the now virtual SAP Sapphire conference in June might turn out. So Brian, you've been listening in on SAP's earnings call and following the vendor pretty closely.
I'm just reflecting, David, that this time last year, so from like the 7th to the 9th of May, your good self and Jim O'Donnell and me from Computer Weekly, all at Tech Target, of course, were at the Sapphire conference in Orlando. And of course, we're not there today because that conference was, like many other conferences, cancelled because of the COVID-19 public health crisis. At that time, Bill McDermott was the CEO of SAP. He no longer is. Can maybe get into that a little bit later. He was a co-CEO with Jim Hagemann-Snabe between 2008 and 2013, and then he was sole CEO from 2013 to 2019 when he stepped down to be replaced by Christian Klein and Jennifer Morgan. They had that co-CEO thing going on for a while there. So flash forward to today, probably the easiest way into this is just to reflect briefly on the first quarter results for SAP. I was quite intrigued by the news management of this, because they made a little bit more of a fuss of the preliminary announcement of their results than they normally would, it seemed to me anyway. But at the same time as kind of giving it a little bit more prominence, they also released the results on the day before Good Friday, so the day before the Easter holiday. I know that's not such a big thing in the US, but in Europe and in the UK, that's a long holiday for us. So those results were kind of subtly announced on what is, strictly speaking, Monday, Thursday. And then on Good Friday, they announced that Luka Mucic, and then on Good Friday, they announced that Luka Mucic, the longstanding chief financial officer of SAP, was going to have his contract renewed for 5 more years. So a bit of stability there. And then the full results were announced on the 21st of April. And on the eve of those, they announced that Jennifer Morgan would step down and that Christian Klein would take sole command of SAP, partly because of the context of the COVID-19 crisis and the need for a very kind of direct form of leadership, I suppose. The actual results themselves, I mean, they admitted both in the prelims and in the full results, had been impacted by COVID-19. First 2 months of the year had been pretty good, steady as she goes. And then customers started postponing projects. There was a kind of softening of the revenue in the third month. So software license revenue was down 31% year on year. Total revenue growth seemed pretty much the same as last year, actually. It was about 7% year on year growth to 6.52 billion euros. And the cloud revenue was up by 29%. To the financial markets, they announced that their expectation for the year is revised. So it's now expected to be in a range of 27.8 billion to 28.5 billion. Previous range was 29.2 billion to 29.7 billion. So a slight weakening there in terms of projection. Although on the financial analyst call, Christian Klein did admit, like all of us, that it's all a bit crystal ball at the moment with respect to COVID-19 having the impact that it has. But of course, we, David, we don't really write for investors. We don't really cover companies in that way. We're writing for IT buyers, IT professionals. And one of the kind of key metrics I always think with SAP is how many customers they have for S/4HANA, for their modern ERP system based on their in-memory columnar superfast database HANA. How many customers they have for that? And they said they had more. So 300 in this quarter, 400 in new ones in the year ago quarter compared to the previous quarter. So, bit of growth there in terms of overall customer growth, 14,100 up 23% on the same quarter last year. Nevertheless, we've been tracking this for years now, David. It's not spectacular growth for S/4HANA, is it?
No, it isn't. And one of the things that we've commented on for a number of years now is that most of the real implementations have been the on-premises version of S/4HANA, not the cloud, the true software as a service version called S/4HANA Cloud. However, I was intrigued to hear from Christian Klein, I think it was during the earnings call or maybe during the pre-earnings presentation, where he said they are seeing some interest in people who were thinking of on-premises versions. And I think he might even be referring to Business Suite, not necessarily S/4HANA, who are now more interested in S/4HANA Cloud for all of the same reasons that we are hearing from other vendors, namely that it's easier to implement software as a service ERP, and it's probably more realistic kind of ERP to be running in a time of working from home where everyone's trying to go virtual.
Yeah, it is interesting the way that S/4HANA is clearly being adopted, and they flagged some customers in the results as well, some quite kind of high profile customers. Danone, a Brazilian education company, Konya, Edu, Cacao, if I pronounced that correctly, probably not. And a Germany-based customer, MTU, Rolls-Royce. So it is being adopted slowly but surely, if you like. I always reflect back to the SAP UK and Ireland user conference that takes place towards the end of the year every year. And they survey their members every year. And this year, they found that 20% of SAP's customers who were responding to that user group survey have no intention of moving to S/4HANA at all. It's just not something that they're going to do. And 20% is quite a big chunk of your customer base that is just saying, yeah, that's not something we're going to do.
You were saying about SAP, some other interesting developments, I think also in the indirect licensing saga, which you've been following very closely.
Well, this is always very interesting because however SAP might like to talk about most recently Qualtrics. It's Qualtrics acquisition for $8 billion in 2018. That it was trumpeting so much in 2019 at Sapphire, and the year before that it was C/4HANA, which was the customer-facing complement to S/4HANA. And I think the year before that, or even the year before that, it was Leonardo, which was the way they were badging all their magic artificial intelligence, machine learning, Internet of Things stuff as being a catalyst for digital transformation. However much they like to talk about that sort of thing, when Bill McDermott stood up at Sapphire in, I think, 2017 and announced that they were going to they were going to render more sophisticated their indirect licensing model to basically moving from user-based pricing to document-based pricing. It gave some specific examples. I know we've spoken about this before, procure-to-pay and quote-to-cash, or, you know, there's one or two others. I mean, it practically took the roof off. I mean, this is what SAP customers are really interested in. It's that indirect licensing. So what's that about? It's a very, very complex topic, but it basically involves customers maybe using, say, Salesforce, but Salesforce, which touches an SAP system, and SAP saying, okay, well, you owe us in terms of the users for this. And so you have this almost like hidden licensing. And the famous case was the Diageo case here in the UK, where SAP won its case in the High Court against Diageo, which was using an SAP system in conjunction with a Salesforce system. And they were therefore held to be liable for the users who were using that SAP software. And what they did, therefore, was they developed this new model called digital access, which is supposed to be, well, you could fairly say is, a much more modern way of charging for ERP software. And that was warmly welcomed, I remember, in 2017 when Bill McDermott kind of adumbrated it. Mm-hmm. And in the following year, in 2018, they had the digital access model. And I remember Philip Adams from the UK and Ireland SAP user group, former chairman, said, well, you know, we didn't ask them for a new model. We just asked them for, to be fair, in terms of what they were charging us. But anyway, they developed this model, and that model was then supported by a program, the Digital Access Adoption Program, which was announced at Sapphire last year. And very, very recently, like last week, Robin Manhertz did a blog. He's the chief performance officer, I think, at SAP, announcing the extension of the Digital Access Adoption Program to the 31st of December 2021. And there's a whole host of user quotes and, you know, support of the extension of that kind of program for making digital access easier and explainable and transparent to users. But this is the sort of thing that really excites SAP customers.
It certainly seemed at the earlier conference that you mentioned in 2017, SAP was very much under fire for that suit and some of their statements, and Bill McDermott, the then CEO, was saying all the right things. So it sounds like they have at least tried to deliver on some of the good intentions. Is that a fair depiction, or do you feel like it's still pretty?
I think so. And you know, there is a really good description of digital access in a link from the blog by Robin Manhertz that announced the extension of the program. We'll share that link in the summary article for the podcast, no doubt. But that's the sort of thing that really excites customers. And yet something like the Qualtrics acquisition, I mean, just referring back to that SAP UK and Ireland user conference back in November of 2019 last year, I mean, they found that a huge number of respondents to their survey hadn't even heard of Qualtrics at all. Only 6% of them thought it was something that could be of benefit to them. Qualtrics, this online survey tool for surveying your employees and your customers, and that they paid $8 billion for in the previous year, 2018. Still, the SAP customers, at least the ones who were going to the conference, hadn't really heard of it and didn't really think that it could add very much to their business. I mean, there's always a disconnect there. It's always a kind of very curious disconnect.
The SAP's been talking about the the X and O story. It reminds me of US football charting of by football coaches to show where people go. That's the X's and the O's. But in this case, it means operational data being merged in a synergistic way, to use that word, with experience data. So the experience data is, you initially think of customer experience data that comes from the customers, but it also employee experience is an important effort of late in IT. You can do way more than you could do with the two independently if you bring them together in clever ways. For example, showing how happier employees can lead to happier customers, which of course can lead to higher revenue. So those are some of the ways that SAP and Qualtrics together have been talking about the benefit of merging those two companies in their systems. And yet I feel that there is still a big question as to how well that merging of systems is being done.
I'm sure they'll get there, and they'll get, you know, customers will get value. Mm-hmm. Get value from this. You know, in the end, I mean, we as Tech Target, we're customers for Qualtrics. So it is a tool that's used both on the customer side on the employee side. Bill McDermott described it as the elixir for cultural change. I think we missed some of Bill's rhetoric, maybe.
Yeah, there will be a change of style, and we're going to talk about Sapphire later, but he had a certain American style, I guess you could say, at a very sales-oriented, sort of high-energy way of presenting SAP products and making the case for SAP at the conference. And there's a different tone, I would say.
Definitely. And I don't want to harp on too much. This is the last thing I'll say about the user group conference in November of 2019. Since then, the world has changed in so many ways after all. But in speaking to Paul Cooper, who's the chair of the user group, Paul said that they, as a user community, they really liked the co-CEO model. So they were quite happy with the Christian Klein and Jennifer Morgan combination, because they felt that it was a good kind of combination of sales and engineering and kind of America and Germany. And at the end of the day, you know, SAP is a German company. And they liked that model because they liked it when Bill McDermott and Jim, they liked it when they were a duo as well. So it'll be interesting to find out sometime what they now think of Christian Klein being in sole command.
I may just be naturally skeptical, but when the argument was made by SAP recently that the crisis of the coronavirus called for one person at the helm, I suppose it's true. It could just as easily be a compelling argument, and the real reasons why they moved from the two CEO model to one. But as you say, there's arguments on both sides. And I think sometimes having two brains at the helm can be better in certain crises. And a lot of it depends on how well those two work together. I suppose that's an element of this too.
Yeah, it just struck me as very interesting that the user community, at least in the UK and Ireland, did appreciate that model, and we're looking forward to seeing how it was gonna develop with Jennifer and with Christian. I've met Christian Klein a couple of times in previous roles, and he is very smart, very switched on, and I think the user group people like him as well. And the fact that he has done an S4HANA implementation himself at SAP, you know, he really gets the engineering detail of the complexity of that.
Well, this would be a good point to move on to our second topic, which is looking at the rest of the industry and how the drastic change in the economic situation and how people work is affecting the ERP industry. The quarantine, it's certainly boosting demand for technology that facilitates working from home. And so this isn't just the Zoom videos that are becoming famous and ubiquitous, and collaboration tools such as Microsoft Teams, both of which we use at TechTarget, but also to a large degree, software as a service ERP, doing other transactions over the cloud and not needing to be in the physical premises to access that software. At the same time, though, the pandemic is forcing ERP vendors to learn how to service their existing ERP contracts remotely. So we're talking about maintenance of all sorts of aspects, but also simple maintenance and servicing of both on-premises and cloud with limited ability to visit the customer site. So they are having to do that, but they're also needing to figure out how to further ERP deployments, both types, including software as a service. And so we are seeing some evidence. Just the other day, I was reading an account from our friends, full credit, Derek Dupreez at Diginomica, who interviewed Mr. Samuelson, the new CEO of Infor, who talked about putting in place and having some success at remote implementations. And this is primarily of their cloud products. So we are seeing both a challenge for the ERP vendors and also some rising to the occasion because there is a potentially dire situation facing them in the drop in demand for ERP use. When you have, and this has been widely reported now, there was a CNBC article by Tim Mullaney on the CNBC website, but it's been reported elsewhere, that large percentages of companies' workforces are being, at least temporarily, furloughed. And so you have far less use of the ERP systems than was anticipating when these contracts were written. And so not only do you have that kind of financial stress on the end customer, but you have some pressure now on the ERP vendors to reconsider their contracts and to give perhaps better payment terms. So as part of this economic pressure from the vendor point of view, if we can talk about them briefly, the CNBC article, which we shared and discussed quite a bit at TechTarget, was very astute for pointing out and quoting financial analysts primarily about how this recession, which could become a depression, is so different from the 2008-2009 Great Recession, which for one thing was mostly limited. The industries that it struck were mostly in the financials, as we had the major financial firms going out of business. And we had the credit crunch, and we also had the real estate market, largely driven by secondary mortgages. So those were the two industries that put the whole world into a recession, really. But this time, you've got pretty much every industry that is seeing a sharp downturn in demand. Certainly the smaller businesses, especially, as we know, restaurants, so the retail food business and the regular retailers, especially smaller companies with less money perhaps in the bank, are seeing the greatest hardships. And so this is, on the one hand, this is affecting the business that's going to vendors such as Sage and Infor, to some degree Microsoft, that have a large component or a percentage of their business from small to medium-sized businesses. So there are some pressures here, but then also opportunities for the customer, for the user to try to renegotiate their contracts, because this is a virtually unprecedented, unforeseen situation, and it doesn't seem fair, and it is economically stressful for them to continue to have to pay at the same rate. So this applies on the one hand to software as a service. It would seem to be, and it has been, a boon to software as a service, ERP, as we've been discussing. But at the same time, there is some downward pressure on subscription revenue, because a lot of people, some people are tied into cloud contracts. Contracts, upfront contracts, are not exclusive to on-premises. They certainly exist also for some cloud products. But there's been generally a move towards pay-as-you-go, a monthly subscription, and that's the very thing that's the most susceptible to a downturn, from fewer people literally being at their desks. And even if their desk is at home, if they have been furloughed and they are not logging into their company ERP, there's a significant reduction, sometimes as much as half, certainly a quarter to a third, maybe half of the workforce is no longer using that ERP. So amid all that pressure on the vendors, is an opportunity for the end customer to renegotiate some of those contracts. At TechTarget attended a virtual conference called Digital Stratosphere, which is the consulting firm, Third Stage Consulting, and they had some presentations by some attorneys who were talking about how you can try to renegotiate your contract, and you have every right to look at the clauses within your existing contract and ask for some reconsideration, perhaps different payment terms, to get a break, essentially, from your ERP vendor. And our colleague Jim O'Donnell did some excellent reporting on those panels, and I believe he talked to some of the attorneys and other experts who are advising people on what to do to relieve some of the stress of continuing to pay for your ERP system. Another phenomenon that we're hearing about as a positive of coronavirus, related again to the increase in use of software as a service, and that is the opportunity to further digital transformation as opposed to put it on hold. So I think supply chain and having, you know, even now while you're dealing with the crisis, to try to do what you can with your systems and to improve your systems while you're dealing with this emergency, it could lead to, it's another case in which business might change forever because of things that have been done during the pandemic, but also lessons that have been learned. And the supply chain is one of the main areas where this is already an issue, and I think the point has really been driven home. And then more generally, other aspects of digital transformation, which is one of the biggest buzzwords in the world of ERP the last few years, and also, frankly, a marketing buzzword that can be very difficult to figure out how to make into a reality. And it's another silver lining of this crisis that in some ways companies are going digitally transforming themselves more. The most obvious example of which is increasing remote work and proving to themselves that you can have more of your workforce work remotely and that there are benefits to that. I was talking to a CIO just yesterday who has discussed with his CEO how the shift to a 100% virtual workforce, which is they see as temporary because of coronavirus, has shown how you can do this far more than you would have thought in the past, and that you can collaborate, especially with the right tools. Online tools, you perhaps can collaborate even more effectively, and you can have some cost savings from not having to have everyone in the same location. So Brian, as you pointed out, at this time last year, we were at Sapphire in Orlando. It's the perennial location, the SAP Sapphire Now Conference and America's SAP User Group get together.
Yes, my annual trip to Florida, yeah.
Yes, your only trip to Florida, I guess. Probably, you would not ever be a tourist to Florida, you don't think? Or
I don't think so. No. I don't think so. I mean, no disrespect to Florida. I know it's a very popular holiday destination. But for me, it's synonymous with Sapphire. But they're going to be doing it virtually, are they not? So
they are. And technically, they started some 15-minute videos that all have pandemic-related themes. So they have been talking to some partners and I think customers about ways that companies can adapt, especially with the increased remote work. But we understand, though, that the main part of Sapphire that we're used to, which is when SAP rolls out its strategy and some of its product announcements, will actually begin on June 15th. So it's a one-month delay from what was scheduled. And that's when the new sole CEO, Christian Klein, former co-CEO, will do, as we've been told, a 60-minute broadcast, probably with a couple of customers and some other members, perhaps of the SAP executive board. I would assume that Hasso Plattner would be one of those, to talk about the main theme of the intelligent enterprise. Now, the intelligent enterprise is certainly something that SAP's been talking about for a year or two, tying it off into their Leonardo platform, integration of AI into the cloud and Internet of Things, analytics. So it's a very high concept sort of idea that apparently will be the main theme. We don't yet know. We may get word soon whether there will be any major product announcements. There are going to be some tracks or what they call channels on topics like experience management. So that's the Qualtrics technology primarily. There'll be supply chain management. One other thing I will throw in, and I want to ask your take on all of this, of course. The Barcelona, Spain version, originally scheduled for Barcelona of Success Connect, which is the Success Factors user conference, that will be run as a virtual conference in that same week in June, the days following the June 15th presentation. And also the Ariba Live version for everyone but North America. So the virtual version of Ariba Live happened, I think last month or a month before, it was a while ago. And they will be doing a virtual version for Europe, the Middle East, Africa, and Asia Pacific also, as part of the virtual conference week coming up in June. So Brian, every year we go to this conference and we also are looking at how executive changes, and that there have been really many more this time, might affect sort of the direction of the company and the perception of customers. Do you have any thoughts about what we might see?
I would kind of ground in what SAP users have said to me about their perception of Christian. He's been at SAP, I was going to say man and boy, but of course he's a very youthful CEO. He's 38, I think, maybe 39. His CEOs are getting younger, but he does seem to command fairly solid respect for his own work at SAP and implementing S/4HANA and things like that. But no, I'd like to kind of sign out, I suppose, just by flagging a couple of customers who SAP are trying to get briefings for me. The briefings may not come off, but they've given me some very, very interesting little kind of abstracts of what these customers have been doing with SAP. One is Vodafone. Vodafone's a very kind of important customer, and do you know what they have done a full SAP S/4HANA implementation, big bang rollouts, they say in the text that I've got here, across 26 countries. and 130 plus legal entities. It's an extensive project. Also includes some global rollouts of SAP Concur, SAP SuccessFactors, and Ariba. So it's a real kind of full Monty, cutting edge SAP digital transformation going on there. It'll be interesting to hear about that if I can get that briefing in the books. And I also wanted to flag another possible case study that's coming my way, and that's with Grundfos, who is a pumps company. And guess what? They have implemented the X plus O solution for real. They have integrated Qualtrics with an SAP customer relationship management system. So this stuff is being used. However kind of cynical or skeptical I might have seemed earlier in flagging up how Qualtrics seems to have passed a lot of SAP customers by, it is being used and it is being integrated with other SAP software. And similarly with S4 HANA, its growth might not have been as stellar as maybe Hasso-Plattner had envisaged in the first place, but it is still there, it is still growing, and it is still key to digital transformation projects at very big, very serious user organizations.
That does it until next time. Thank you for listening, and thank you, Brian.
Thank you, David.